to be doing a test of how loud you speak.
Hello and welcome to this week's first time extra episode of Red Femme.
We are today going to be discussing Risa Tisa.
But this time with spoilers.
With spoilers, so.
We've given you 5 days to watch this 51-part series on TikTok.
So if you haven't yet watched it, go on to TikTok, type in Risa, R-E-E-S-A, Tisa, T-E-E-S-A, and you'll find it.
Or you can listen to this if you don't want to have to watch it.
Yeah, yeah.
You want the full rundown.
You want the full rundown.
So for new listeners, I'll just do a quick recap of this is a viral TikTok series by a working class black woman in Atlanta. And it's called Who the Fuck Did I Marry?
Yeah.
And basically, she met a man on Facebook dating before COVID. And he wasn't who he said he was. He kind of made up siblings that he didn't have. He took her to supposedly his grandmother's grave, but she thinks that probably wasn't his grandmother's grave. He said he had a corporate job and he would leave for work every day. And he was paying the rent. Like, he was very invested in this relationship, or seemed like it, because he was paying the rent and buying her groceries. So she thought, oh, I've met a guy who's a hard worker. He's done well in life. And they were deciding to get married because she's a very Christian woman. And he's claimed to be from a big Christian church-going family. And also they had a miscarriage during COVID. She had a miscarriage. So they were very in. They were all in this relationship. But slowly but surely, because he couldn't actually get the mortgage that he kept saying he would apply for, he would
have... Well, he had a letter printed from Chase Bank saying that he was approved for a $70,000 mortgage and it kept falling through.
$700,000. Yeah.
Or was it 70? Whatever. Some huge amount of money. Housing prices aren't that expensive and...
In America.
In Atlanta, Georgia.
But he also kept saying that I have $700,000 in cash from the time I played football at university.
Arena football.
Which is a made up thing.
No, arena football is real.
Oh, yeah?
He just was never
in it.
It's like a minor football league that he claimed he had this history that he was in. It's like playing football in a basketball arena. It's very weird. But he claimed he had this career in arena football and had some money from
it. But whatever he would promise, it would always fall through. And he didn't promise her outlandish things, but he promised her the life of what we would say in the UK, a middle-class comfortable life.
Yeah.
Which is, of course, highly desirable. Like, he would say, oh, I'll take you to London and Paris. He didn't say, I'll take you on a 5-star package holiday to Hawaii.
Well, he made this big thing and I got you a room at the Savoy. Like, it was really...
Did he?
Yeah. It was really really sadistic. And what she said was he enjoyed putting something in front of me and then taking it away.
Right.
He had her pick a specific car with a specific interior that he was going to get her and test drive it and do all this shit. He liked dangling it in front of her and then taking it away.
What was his excuse for the car?
Oh, I'm trying to think. It was something about a company car, and he was approved for a company car, but not her car. But then he was going to get the company car and then give her that car, or it was some complicated thing.
He made out it was for bureaucratic reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you often do hit a wall with bureaucracy.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this is the spoiler episode. So this guy was lying, as we all know, but what he was really doing is he had a normal job, I think just in construction.
He was a forklift loader at the condiment company he claimed to be an executive at.
Okay.
And he worked at a graveyard or a cemetery as a landscaper or a groundskeeper. And he did ad hoc construction.
Right.
Yeah.
So he had a very normal, probably like lower working class type.
Yes.
Collection of jobs. And what he was doing was he was just giving her all of his money.
Yes.
So, of course, to a normal person that looks like this person's rich, they wouldn't just give me all of the money. They wouldn't just pay all the rent. They wouldn't pay all the groceries. But it was then to really afford the plausibility of this illusion he was trying to present that he had a lot more money. And actually, he was just giving her all his money.
Yes.
And what's weird is if he'd just done that, she probably also would have been quite happy.
Well, this is the thing. This is how you know he like brought her in to be sort of an accomplice or a a partner in his like schizophrenic, turns out, that's the other spoiler alert, this man is diagnosed with schizophrenia, delusions. So when he went out into the world, the delusion wasn't real. But when he came home, there was this person he had recruited that he got, that made the delusion more real.
Right. And he was actually acting out the life of his twin brother, who he felt huge competition with, clearly. And he was kind of pretending to be him. His twin brother really is a man with a good corporate job, who's happily married with kids and knows all of his family and has just a normal life. Yeah. Whereas this guy has essentially burned his bridges with everyone, and none of his extended family speak to him. He doesn't really have any friends.
Yeah.
And he would go into the other room in her house and have like daily conversations with his brother, and she would hear him. And it turned out he wasn't on the phone to anyone.
Which is a really hard thing to fake. You can kind of do it like, I think maybe I have, or you have, or some of the listeners have had that, done that cringe thing of pretending to get a phone call to get out of a situation or something. But it's a very different thing to fake phone calls for 40, 50 minutes at a time every morning. And apparently he'd be like, oh yeah, like say hi to Risa Tisa, like she's here, and she go, hey, and he goes, oh, he says what's up. Like he like brought her in to the delusion, and I think he was basically using her as like a device to make it more real.
It's basically in his mind. She was kind of a prop to keep this fantasy going that was clearly doing something for him in terms of him not being as unwell as he could have been. I mean, that's the point of these kind of delusions, is it's really a defensive ego thing that keeps you together.
Yeah.
And I think he certainly seems more ill now. What's so funny is that since this all came out, she found out because she got in touch with his family members. She tried to contact them and they would just say, I've not spoken to him in 5 years. I don't want to hear from him.
Well, what really happened is that how it fell apart was she got the vibe that something was off and something was wrong. And she started to think, I need a better job in order to become more financially independent.
Because this guy's not reliable.
This guy's not reliable.
I have a sense he's not reliable.
And then she said things like she had a feeling kind of internally that something was wrong from the beginning. And she started doing these audio diaries. This is how she's able to remember it in this much detail. She started, because she's like, I just had a sense that something was off, that got more and more foreboding, particularly after they got married, because he started getting jealous and weird. He did that very weird thing where he pretended a man showed up.
Yeah.
To the house. Just to recap, basically he said to her, oh, such and such, a man came by in a black Dodge Charger looking for you. And she said, what?
Who? And he said, I think it's your ex.
Yeah, and she said, well, what, I mean, I don't have a relationship like that with any of my exes. None of them would just show up. Like, I don't do that. That wouldn't be acceptable. I would have to call them and tell them off for doing that. Like, who was it? And he was just like, oh, you know, like, when it's someone you used to mess with. And he's like, and she was like, but what did he look like? What was his skin tone? Like, what kind of haircut does he have?
And then he was very vague. And she knew it wasn't her ex-boyfriend, because her ex-boyfriend was a cop and kind of was very clandestine about it in his community. And a Dodge Charger apparently is a cop car.
Yeah, so he was very clear that he was never going to drive
a
Dodge Charger outside of a workplace context. So she thought it was absolutely not him.
Yeah, and she eventually went to the neighbor who had a Ring door camera, like a doorbell camera, and asked, can we review that day to see who came?
Because she was really freaked out. She's like, is it a debt collector? She's like, is it a maintenance guy from the property association? Is there a pipe burst? Like, she really believed that there was something wrong and wanted to figure out who it was.
And she saw that no one pulled into the driveway that day at all.
Yeah.
When she confronted him, what did he say?
I think that she didn't confront him. I think at that point she started to think, I need to start scheming and planning about, because she was like, that was like one of the scariest moments. Anyway, so she wanted to get a better job in order to become more financially independent, basically. And because she works in law enforcement, part of the onboarding process for a new job is you need to provide all the details of your partner. It's not a regular job at ASDA. If you're going to be working for a police department, you need the social security number, the work history. It's quite extensive. So she asked this of this guy, and she noticed that he was reluctant to give it to her was the first thing.
Yeah, for his social security number.
Which is like a national insurance number in the UK or a social insurance number in Canada. And he was very reluctant to give it to her and eventually did. But then she noticed that it was a different social security number than the social security number on their marriage certificate.
Right.
And she started thinking, and that kind of initiated a chain of events. That
when did he leave? Did she kick him out at one point?
She kicked him out at one point.
Or he kind of went missing, and then she wanted to get into... Oh, yeah, she kicked him out, but she wanted to get in touch with him to sign the divorce papers. And eventually she would kind of find him, and he would look incredibly thin. Like, he'd lost, like, 30, 50 pounds. Mm. And it eventually became clear that he was, like, living in his car.
Yeah, that was after the divorce. But before that, I think it's important people to know that the social security number thing got her in contact with his ex-wife, who basically told her that you know, he's a liar. He's a pathological liar. Yeah. All of this stuff is a lie.
Yeah.
And he had done this to probably 2-3 other women.
Right. I mean, it's so crazy, but, like, I kind of have questions for Risa Tisa.
Yeah.
Which is, I get that this guy at the time was not as unwell as he is now, because now, in fact, he created his own TikTok, and he's basically living in La La Land again. He's saying, oh, it's all lies, and thank you to Netflix for giving me my own series to tell my side. She just cheated, and that's why we broke up. And then he puts a photo, he's like photoshopping himself into a picture of Netflix headquarters. And then people just find it on Google, and they're like, this is Singapore.
Yeah.
And apparently you can even search videos on Google now. So all these videos that he's grabbed from somewhere of the reception of Netflix, they're like, this is from this account. This is from 2018. And he still continues. So my questions are, how did you not get a vibe that this guy was unwell, number one? And number two, why did she not? I mean, I know that you're not suspicious of your partner until a while into things where they keep on promising stuff and it doesn't happen. But these photos or these scans or these printouts, that was it, printouts of the mortgage application being approved, he got them all off Google.
Yeah.
So she could have found them.
I think the whole, what had happened was, the whole thing was, like, this whole cycle of approving mortgages and getting in touch with estate agents and going to see houses, and then it was this weird thing of, oh no, I have the money up front, but it won't provide proof of funds, whatever. This cycle had happened 3 or 4 times, and then she said to him, I just don't want to hear about it. We're not moving. Like, I don't want to do this cycle again. I just want you to handle it. Don't tell me about it. If we're moving into a new house, just literally don't tell me about it, and I'll show up because I can't live through the stress anymore. Mm. So I think that she had just let it go and thought, like, oh, this is a big bureaucratic mess that I can't deal with. Really, it was a social security number and then getting in touch with the ex-wife.
Right.
Because lying about your social security number is...
Well, it shows you have something to hide.
Bizarre.
Yeah, there's no reason unless you have to hide
and
something.
And what he was hiding was the criminal convictions.
Right. Yeah, so apparently this guy had been to prison, but then in America, it was in one of those open prisons, so he had a job. Weekend prison.
You can do your prison time on the weekend.
That's so crazy.
Yeah.
That's like debtor's prison from the Victorian era. So he would come out of prison during the week to go to work.
Yeah.
And so he had,
he had these slips from the weekend prison, the signing in and out of the weekend prison.
And she found them.
That's at the end of the story, but yeah.
Wow.
And his criminal conviction was for impersonating a police officer, going into like an apartment complex.
Okay.
And pretending to be a police officer and saying he was doing a search for drugs and he was a detective. The woman that he knocked on the door of to do the search worked at the police department and said, I don't know you. Let me just call my colleagues. And then he got done and put in prison for it. So this was a person with like persistent behavior of delusions.
Yes.
In my understanding of schizophrenia, it's often auditory hallucinations of voices, which are the big thing. I just think my pop psychology opinion, bear with me, is that he's a narcissist who creates these delusions to feed his ego. And that when they fall apart, he goes into psychosis.
Yeah, I mean, he also might be a schizophrenic who's not always that ill and instead lives in a kind of delusional, semi-real world. Like, his touchstones are real. Job, house, like, those are real things. He's not kind of like, I'm the king of Wonderland.
And he did have, he was having conversations with a fake brother.
Well, like,
those were auditory hallucinations, I'm sure.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, because, like, it's really hard to sustain that.
Very hard to sustain.
For a long period of time. It becomes like, even if you're so into the fantasy that you're responding, that's a bit crazy.
But look, like, I guess he seemed like a great deal, and I'm sure he was offering her a great deal. The people that I know that will pay for everything for a partner, they're trying to make up for a personal deficit where they basically say, I want to make it worth it for you to be with me, so I'm going to just shower you with all of this money. It's true.
Or I think it's often something more sinister, which is, I want to create a power dynamic here.
Yeah, okay, yeah, maybe. I don't know those people. But so I think he knew, I need the, I don't know what the word is in con artistry, but it's like the lure, like the thing that gets you in.
Yeah.
And, but even going off his photos on Facebook, I can look at this man and know that he's not well. How could she not spot this, I wonder?
I think maybe she was like, oh, I just wanted, like, a husband who was a bit like me and that we could have, like, funny banter with each other back and forth. I just think she thought, like, not a looker, but also I'm not a looker. Normal guy, normal job. This all checks out.
Good company.
Good company.
Claims to be Christian, too.
Yeah, yeah.
And honestly, when... if you're looking for a very serious relationship that becomes marriage and kids, to meet someone who's up for that challenge is quite rare. And then obviously you're very happy about it because you're like, great, I found someone else that wants to do this joint project.
Yeah.
And you probably do then become less scrutinizing about whatever foibles you might otherwise notice if you were just dating in the, like, we're just dating to have some fun and sex, rather than thinking, okay, well, I want to look for someone with an income who's up for having kids, who's up for being committed and married and wants to, you know, buy a house together. And I do think the way that he presented that he had a good job will have done at least 50% of the job.
I think so, yeah.
In securing her.
And then if you ever think it's fake, you're like, well, where does he get the money to pay all the bills?
Well, that was the question.
Yeah.
That was what I couldn't work out. I thought second family, you know, illicit means like this drug, sorry, it's like drug money or something, some kind of criminal enterprise. But this guy also doesn't seem like he'd have it together for that, the way that she kept talking about. Like, if you can't work out how to apply for a mortgage for some reason, I think you can't be in the criminal underworld. But I think that, yeah, I mean, it was actually that he was just giving her all of his money.
Yeah.
And if he'd been a normal working class guy to do that, right, and said, look, I don't have the best jobs in the world, but I work really hard and I'll give you all my money, a lot of women would be like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. I do think that a lot of women are like, oh, I'm going to find my person. It's going to be my turn. It's going to come together. And she was like, I'm not. If it makes me look bad, I'm going to say it. I'm going to say when I was naive. I was going to say when I was stupid. And I saw some women responding to it on TikTok being like, everyone's judging Risa Tisa, but be honest with yourself. We've all been there. We've all pretended not to see signs. We've all pretended not to see red flags in people. Mm. I think a lot of lesbians can relate to this as well.
Yeah.
You want to believe, like, the narrative and the fantasy.
Well, you also want it to be that. So if you kind of clock that someone's quite horrible, you think, but they're not going to be horrible to me.
Yeah.
This was a mistake I used to make when I was much younger.
I think I made this mistake as well. Yeah.
But the reality is because you're going to be the most intense relationship in their life, anything that they are in terms of their personality, they're going to be the most that with you.
Yeah.
So it's not possible to be with someone who's horrible and it won't be your turn sometime.
Yeah.
And I think that also I used to find red flags interesting and I'd want to know where they came from.
Yeah.
That not only would I kind of make excuses or try and not think about it, I also wanted to, because I was interested in the person, I'd want to know where this bad quality arrived from. And now I don't have that curiosity anymore and I just stop it.
Yeah, or you think, like, I'll be the exception, the context is different, it's whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm glad she's gone mega viral. I'm glad that she's getting her trip to London and it's pretty much being paid for.
I heard she was posting about how the TikTok beta program thing kicked her off briefly, then had her back on. It's very buggy. It's not, like, solid at all.
Beta? Do you mean creator?
No, it's a beta, as in it's a... It's a draft program. They haven't finished it.
Oh.
So it's called the creator program beta. Oh, they're okay. Just like rolling it out a right. little bit.
But she got some money, surely.
I think she got money for merch and the trip, but I don't think she's gotten any money. She was like showing like, oh, I've just been approved. Hopefully this now goes through. I'm verified. I just got my ID verified. And this was a couple days ago. So,
but anyway, so Delta Airlines are flying her to London. Then she's getting a free hotel suite on Trafalgar Square.
Jen loves this part of the story because she loves planning trips for women and yes. making women happy. So she's like,
yeah,
she's just like, she would die to be Risa Teese as a personal tour guide.
Yes.
In London. It would be like Jen would do that for free.
I would.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
Oh, I gave her advice. I've commented on her TikToks. Like, you have to go for afternoon tea at the Montague Hotel it's called the Montague Gardens Hotel. Some weird long name.
Yeah.
And I was like, you need to do this, but don't do that. It's actually rubbish. And yeah. And then in Paris, even, they've given her a hotel suite for free.
I mean, even the French being nice to this lady.
The French being generous is quite
something.
Yeah.
But I think there, I do understand what people are saying, like, why did she not notice this guy was crazy? And I think that, you know, you can't always tell from online. People are generous. She went on the date. He did responsible things. She thought, surely this is a responsible man. And I just think with this kind of person, when their narcissistic delusion falls apart, the more crazy they get. If they're maintaining the delusion, they're pleasant. The more it breaks apart, the less pleasant they are. And I just think that was the...
It was also quite quick. I mean, if this started just before COVID... It was 2 years, yeah.
Basically.
So all of this has been done and wrapped up within 2 years.
Yeah.
And I also think that this is a little bit of why people should guard against, I think, dating apps or meeting someone when you don't meet them in the context of your life, of their life, rather.
Yeah.
Is that often what happens is, because everyone can be pleasant, everyone can be agreeable, and you can think, oh, this person's great, but you've not seen them react to something.
Yeah, it's that thing about subjectivity through events.
Yeah.
Can you explain that?
I mean, I don't know really much about it, but Alain Badiou, who's like one of the best living French philosophers, if not the best, has this theory of subjectivity that you can only really see people's subjective whatever takes or politics or who they are in their reactions to things through an event. So it's a little bit like, as an example, before the whole October 7th and then, you know, assault on Gaza thing. A lot of people would talk theoretically in a sympathetic way, one way either to Israel or Palestine, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe both. They'd be very even-handed. But then when an event happens, you actually, it's in people's honest responses that you go, oh, actually, this is where you stand.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that when you don't see how someone copes with adversity in their own life, you don't know them.
Yeah.
And it's like that thing they say in Islam of like, if you haven't traveled with someone, haven't worked with them or lived with them, you don't really know them.
Yes.
I kind of feel like that's a bit true.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you can have a sort of superficial relationship where it's just an exchange of pleasantries and the bedroom. And then something really bad can happen, like one of you get cancer or one of you have a bereavement, and you really see how the other person handles it and realize, like, who the fuck have I been with?
It's also meeting people. It's like, I totally get why people do it, right? It's because these third spaces don't exist. We don't go to church anymore, really. We don't go to the bowling alley, that whole bowling alone thing. We don't, you know, hang out in mutual spaces. It doesn't really happen.
No one chats each other up at coffee shops like in the 90s on Friends.
No. Well, and there's also not those mutual spaces for people to hang out. There's this whole thing about like Americans aren't hanging out anymore. People aren't getting together anymore. So meeting people online is where you would do it. But if you were to meet a man at church or at the bowling alley or the local pub, as you've said before in this podcast, like, people would know him. You'd be like, oh, this guy's Legion. You'd be like, Legion, I know his brother. Actually, turns out he's totally full of shit.
Yeah.
Like, you shouldn't be talking to him. He's crazy, actually. and that would be that. But because you don't have the community of people,
yeah,
you can't see where people fit in the community.
Well, it's also about looking at people in their context. And of course, I mean, it does take deception. Someone can be very honest about their context, but it's also the case that they can be dishonest and you don't know.
Yeah.
Depending, really. And I think that there's such a big question mark about this thing of meeting people online or dating apps, because you meet them sort of in a more abstract concept away from their life. And yeah. then, after a year, there was something that I said on the Patreon podcast that was some advice from an Australian radical feminist mother, which was don't move in with someone or marry them until you've been together 18 months.
Yeah.
And she put it as, because it can just be lust or it can just be infatuation. But what it really means is you haven't seen them in a way where they're not just, say, being nice to you, where they're not like sort of correlating their behavior in order to proceed in the relationship. Mm-hmm. Like, you basically need to see someone on their worst day.
Yeah.
And you need to see, how do they react to not getting their own way, things going wrong. You know, when they say, let's go on a trip, do they follow through with it?
Yeah.
But no, but it could be something else.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's like, does the person's word mean that it's going to happen?
And often most people of the time aren't intentionally like misrepresenting themselves, and people are always presenting the best part of themselves. People aren't going to necessarily know that they're quite resentful or necessarily understand the extent to which they, I don't know, isolate when upset or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I actually think people are themselves all the time. I think this guy just had a big fiction.
But do they know about their flaws?
Oh, yeah, a lot of people aren't reflective about that.
Or they just don't know.
But this is also why I think that if I were to proceed in the dating world, I think it's fine for you to have like a pleasant first date to see if you're at all compatible. Like, do you fancy each other and could you carry a conversation? I actually think from that point, you should be able to ask. Oh, it's my Ocado delivery.
That's okay. Sorry. We can pause. Do you want to pause it or leave it?
No.
Okay. Is it a big delivery? Do you need help?
Yeah, well, you can always help me. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. My foot is so asleep. I'm coming in a second.
Okay, sorry. That was my Ocado delivery because I'm trying to be middle class. at least culturally. So, yeah. I think that if you date someone quite early on, maybe not on the first date, I think you can basically, in a polite way, ask a fairly invasive question.
Yeah.
Like, what's your relationship with your father? Or my favorite question is, what do you have to offer in a relationship? Because if that person doesn't know, then they're not even thinking about their contribution to a relationship at all.
Mine are, do you lie to your parents? Do you still lie to your parents as an adult?
Mm.
Which I know sounds like a weird one, but it lets me know a lot. Lets me know how separate you are from them, basically. And if you still do dynamics to your family, lets me know a lot.
Yeah, so you've not grown up out of teenagehood.
Yeah, and that you still really care about their approval and that kind of thing. And then the other one is, tell me a time that you... Probably this is not a first date question, and you probably say it in a less, you know, HR interviewing way, but tell me a time in which you made a mistake and learned from it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's good.
Yeah.
I think that people should be able to name 5 things that they have to offer in a relationship, or they just haven't considered it. And there's a lot of people, a lot of women, probably men, I just don't really know.
I think so.
That, you know what I'm going to say next?
Yeah, yeah.
That, think of relationships as a nice thing for them.
Mm.
Someone is going to be nice to me and make me feel special. Someone is going to do things for me, and someone is going to give me things. And I've asked so many women previously, what do you have to offer in a relationship? And they've come back either with an absolute zero and just said, I don't know, or the typical feminine go-to. And by the way, this includes women that claim to be radical lesbian separatists, but femininity, you can't get rid of it if it's ideologically in you. They will literally say, and I've had several women say this, I cook and clean well and I'll have sex.
Yeah.
Like that, just the model of like, I make the home and you get access to my golden triangle.
Yeah.
And what they don't realize is, as a lesbian, we've got our own golden triangles.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think of sex as an extra. I just think, well, that's probably part of the relationship.
Right.
And I don't care about cooking, cleaning.
No.
But they think, because that's what a lot of men would want.
Yeah.
Is someone to cook and clean for them and give them sexual access. They don't bother thinking about what else they have to offer or developing themselves at all.
Yeah.
But I think you're allowed, probably on the second or third date, to ask these things, not in a rude way, but if someone starts getting iffy about it, that's another problem. I'd never get iffy about it.
Yeah.
Lovely.
I just don't know what happened. I just breathed in some chickpeas. My mistake. I ate them so quickly. Nice snacks.
Yes, that's what we call a middle class gurgle, when one has eaten their posh snacks too quickly on their L-shaped sofa.
It was really nice. Your very small aquata order had some very nice snacks.
You can take some with you.
Okay. What was I saying? I think it is good to ask difficult questions. I think that if people don't have like a story or a narrative about who they are that makes sense, if people don't have other people to vouch for them that you can meet and talk to,
yeah,
that's a problem.
Oh, you should totally judge people by their friends and the company they keep. Because I fully believe it's something they say on Manosphere podcast quite a lot, this idea that you're an average of your five closest friends.
It's true.
It's true.
Yeah, it is true.
It's definitely the case, and it gives you an insight into what sort of person this is. Okay, you're not exactly like your friends, but there'll be similar elements, or you just wouldn't be friends. You wouldn't get along.
And I also think it's okay to be a bit... I think when I was younger, I thought having kind of simple standards, like, you know, I want someone who reads. I thought, oh, but like people are more complex than that. Maybe they don't read, but they do whatever. Now it's like, no, it's okay to have that standard. Like, if you're a gym person, it's okay to have the standard of like, no, I want someone who goes to the gym.
Yeah.
Like, it's okay to have the standard of, I want someone who reads. It's okay to have the standard of like, I want someone who's the same religion as me. Like, it's okay to have simple standards.
And the reason that I think this is good to have candid conversations is partly you can see whether someone is rude. Because you can have these conversations in a polite way that isn't really, doesn't feel invasive and is meaningful, and that you don't have to like make judgments simply like based, like immediately. Like if someone told me, I don't know, that they used to be in prison, I wouldn't immediately be like,
Yeah.
I would definitely be intrigued. Like, okay, but how and why? And then like, how is your life so different now?
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that it's like a tick box. It's more, can this person explore and reflect about themselves? And also, do they have boundaries? Because you can ask a personal question and they can give an impersonal but answer that but does provide, does answer the question and does provide some insight.
And one thing that I think lesbians in particular need to hear, and maybe this will, whatever, but I really believe this, there is such a thing as a time boundary. And if someone won't respect your time boundaries, that's a problem.
What's the time boundary?
I only have 2 hours to meet and then I gotta go, and they won't fuck off, or like they're just wanting to be on the phone or text you all the time and you're like, I have life to do. This is a problem.
Yeah.
Because I think with lesbians early on, it's like this merging thing that happens.
Well, one thing that I really don't like in others is rejection sensitivity. It's not the worst quality, but I don't love it. And I think that if you say to someone, I actually only have 2 hours to have a drink with you.
Yeah.
And I need to definitely be gone within 2 hours. If they're like, oh, yeah, that's fine. Again, this is quite a good test.
Yeah, it is a good
and
test.
And the problem is a lot of people will think, oh my God, that means she doesn't want to drink late with me. It means we won't end up sleeping together. I needed to like nail this on the first date to like get this down. It's like, no, you should be able to wait. If you're an adult, you should be able to bear the tension of waiting as to whether I text you later and say, oh, I had a really nice time. I'd like to see you this weekend. Are you free?
This advice also applies to friends, by the way.
Right.
I know. Yeah, it applies to friends.
Yeah.
People who just like show up, who won't leave when you're making it obvious that you want them to leave. Like, this is all a big red flag for sure.
Yes, it is. And I think that it's not just cues. It's not that people are bad at reading social cues. Some people are. I get that there's some autistic people that are. Yeah. But a lot of the time, it's just pure entitlement.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's not caring about the other person.
Mm.
And that's that. So I just think that if you're going to do the Facebook dating thing and not end up in a Legion and Risa Tisa scenario, you can be in a quiet, polite, open. You also should be open and candid to a degree, but you should sort of be a bit ruthless.
Yeah.
From the start or from the second date.
Yeah. The first date's just like a screening process, to be honest.
Yeah.
It doesn't really count.
Well, it's just, could we fancy each other?
Yeah, it's like being in the same room together for the first time. It's not.
And it's like, can we have a rich conversation at all? Just in a meeting.
Yeah.
So, anyway, thank you for listening to our final Risa Tisa episode.
Yeah, people must watch it. It's very good. She's a very good storyteller. She'd be like the type, like, in a medieval setting, who'd be like the village storyteller.
Yeah, she's very suspenseful.
Very suspenseful, very, like, draws you along, really puts you in the perspective of the different characters, like, does really well with it.
Yeah.
I really hope she does write a book.
Oh, I'm sure she'll be getting book deals and, like, Netflix deals.
Yeah.
Because it's gone insane.
It's gone insane. I'm going to get some of the merch, I think.
Which t-shirt are you going to get? Proof of Funds?
Proof of Funds is very funny. Proof yeah. of Funds is very funny. I think I Survived Legion is a bit too on the nose. People, I don't know if they'd get that, but I do the Proof of Funds is very funny.
Yeah. Oh, just to say as well, I know we're wrapping up, but the fact that Legion is doing TikTok saying people shouldn't Google their partners, and that even if you're years into a relationship, there's some stuff maybe you're not ready for. Like, well, yeah, mate, you. Like, yeah. You, that is what you would say. Like, these are also the kind of comments that you have to listen for people when they speak, because people will tell you who they are.
Yeah, that's another thing.
If you sit back a little bit and ask.
Yes.
And observe.
It's true.
So, all right. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
Bye.